Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to part two of this week's Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with loads in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we were talking The Time Traveller's Wife and all the creepiness therein. And obviously, faring no better in the creepiness competition, today we're chatting Richard Curtis's 2013 slice from the cake of weird that is About Time.
Do you want to know the big secret, or would you rather find it out for yourself like I did?
Oh, Christ, there's another secret.
Less traumatic. Much more important. The real mothership.
Now, go on. Tell me. Let's save some time.
And so he told me his secret formula for happiness.
So which film will be travelling with us through time forever and which will be sent packing to the past? We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Potters. You know, like prostitutes. I always worry that when they stop being prostitutes, they can't enjoy sex anymore. I'm Alex Zane.
I think you counted five times. I counted five times. What's your problem, man? What's your fucking problem?
Yeah. Welcome to part two.
The best bit when he goes, could I have the details of the girls? One of them's like a prostitute, but nice. Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll just give you a fucking address then, shall I? That's in the scene. If she hadn't paid in cash, I would give you her details.
You're not a privileged young man who has the confidence and the ability to ask that and expect to be given that information.
It's so weird. He's supposed to be Hugh Grant, and Hugh Grant and Donald Gleeson are supposed to be Richard Curtis's avatar in the world. Why do you say these things about women? Why? You're supposed to be the nice guy.
I spend the whole of this movie feeling so sorry for Donald Gleeson because I can hear Richard Curtis from behind the camera going, but more like Hugh Grant.
I've got such a good quote for you about
more,
this.
More like Hugh Grant. Really? Because I could do it like, not like you! Not like you, like Hugh!
Brilliant.
Welcome to part two of this week's Clash of the Titles. Time travel tussle with a serving of a double McAdams with cheese on the side. The Time Traveller's Wife versus About Time. As you well know, one film will be declared the winner at the end of the show in the verdicts. But before we get going, it's time for a dip into the digital mailbag.
Oh, good.
We haven't done this for so long.
Yeah, what have we been doing instead?
Well, we did January, February Fanny, and Farch.
Farch, yeah,
so this is, we put it on hold, but now we're back. So this is a review from Apple Podcasts. I've picked this one for a week when Chris is away, for reasons that shall become clear.
Okay.
So strap in. This is from Akira Lives.
Okay.
The title is Pub-Based Film Discussion, Masquerading as a Well-Oiled Podcast.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, Akira Lives knows what he's talking about, or she's talking about, or they're talking about. So this is the review. When I first listened to this podcast, they were comparing Stay Tuned and The Cable Guy. So I gave it a shot, as I didn't think anyone remembered Stay Tuned.
Whoop.
Glad I did, as over the next year and a half, it's become the main podcast to which I listen. I find it funny looking back now after that first episode and thinking I must have had the same film taste as Alex and Vicky, when all this last year has taught me is I'm a Chris Tilley man at heart. Sometimes it's hard to listen to Alex or Vicky berating a film I love one week while giving an easy ride to some truly terrible films the next. I end up pleading for someone to point out what they've overlooked or misunderstood. Unfortunately, Chris, the voice of reason, fair rarely disappoints. Anyway, despite these minor frustrations, or maybe because of them, I really do love this podcast. P.S. Keep the quiz 5 stars.
Wow.
What a journey.
That is amazing.
What a journey we went on.
But we got that person because of Stay Tuned, which we had to fight for that.
We got Akira Lives from Stay Tuned, yeah. But all Akira Lives thinks now is like, thank fuck for Chris Tilley.
Well, fair enough.
Which is why I did it when Chris is away. Because can you imagine, he'd be insufferable for the rest of this show. Insufferable.
He'd ruin it, to be honest.
But thank you, Akira Lives. If you'd like to give us a review, please do head to Apple Podcasts, Apple Books, and give us a review. Right then. So, let's do this. On Monday, we talked the Eric Bananas Time Traveller's Wife. So today, Richard Curtis reteams with Hugh Grant. Sorry, teams up with Donald Gleeson to bring us About Time V takes on Journey.
When is a film not a film? When it's a patchwork quilt of Richard Curtis tropes, TM. Bumbling boy who is entitled and awkward meets American girl who is American. An England you barely recognise despite living here your entire life. A doomed quirky relative with mental ill health telegraphed by wearing shit clothes. Bill Nighy being great. And rain. All stitched together by a bloody monologue and Bill Nighy being great. Tim can time travel, like all the men in his family, which means what? Penis, hormones, what? More importantly, why? So they can trick girls into liking them, of course, and read books, and do lovely, lovely, middle-class things like having cups of tea on deck chairs and developing dementia, just like Uncle D, which is ignored or reasoned out as sweet rather than requiring clinical assistance, much like poor old Kit Kat, whose substance misuse issues are because she likes purple and bad boys and not because she's a second class citizen in her own family. Plus bloody Tim does take her time travelling, which means it's not the men in this family can time travel, it's that they do and don't take the women with them, the bastards. Chuck in the mention of prostitutes, not my words, at least 5 times, and then you start to wonder. And then, despite the complete absence of conflict, jeopardy or drama in Act 2, you are literally watching a wedding you know will happen because the bride and groom are happy and the beginnings of a family you know will be loved because mum and dad are happy, somehow all this monologuing starts to work. And Tim understands that his gift isn't time travel, but learning to live in the present and to live every day as your last. And God damn it, if this film didn't make me cry like a baby. Could it be that I was on day 2 of my hangover after Chris's birthday when I watched this? Perhaps. Or maybe, despite being right now the laziest, most well-paid screenwriter we have, there's just magic in what Richard Curtis can do. And that's even with an Ellie Goulding song splattered all over it and a grown woman fangirling on Kate Moss like that's normal. Who knows?
I mean, it is literally like it's like lesson one, screenwriting, conflict. Just conflict.
Drama is conflict.
Anything. I was watching it going, everyone's just so nice to each other for the whole of Act 2. Yeah. I was like, thank God Kit Kat is maybe going to die.
She's so doomed from the minute you see her, though, because she's in a Richard Curtis movie. It's just unbelievable. I have said this because we've got a lot to get through.
Yep, sure.
I saw it when it came out. I was outraged, as you can imagine. And similarly to Time Traveller's Wife, my circumstances are different now, which has affected how I felt.
Okay.
So, and you?
I've never made it through this whole film.
Interesting.
Because I can't. Because if we weren't doing it for this show, I'd have turned it off. I've got goosebumps thinking about this.
Because you're so angry, yeah.
I want to prefix this show by saying I do like Richard Curtis. I mean, I grew up.
Everybody does.
On Blackadder. Yeah. He's a lovely man.
I like him.
He's a lovely man. Mm-hmm. Notting Hill is good. Like, and you know, Four Weddings and a Funeral is good. Hey, I am one of the few people that will defend Love Actually. I would rather Love Actually be the only film I could watch forever than watch this again.
Really? All this is fascinating.
Four
Weddings is brilliant.
Yeah,
obviously, all of his career, you know, up until that point as well, is brilliant. Love Actually, I cannot abide.
I know you can't. I know that's where
I never saw The Boat That Rocked, in fairness. It's fine, I guess.
It's not.
It's just this man makes me so livid. All right, so we'll just do a bit of background.
Sure.
So, yes. Oh,
is the entire background Richard Curtis saw Groundhog Day?
He says, well, that didn't come up in my research, but I'm sure he has seen it. So it is written and directed by the luckiest son of a bitch you know, which is Richard Curtis. So it is obviously quite easy to take a shot at him, and so I will. So I read a review from Mark Kermode at the time, and I love this because, you know,
He gave it 3 stars, though.
Yeah, he did. So, Richard Curtis has said, his films are populated by, quote, people I know and like. In Mark Kermode's words, which I think is very funny, people for whom financial hardship means a slow day at the bookstore. Love that. That just sums it all up. I think that's perfect. So, apparently, one day, Richard Curtis is having lunch with a friend and you're doing big talk, you know, whether or not they're happy. And he sort of said he surprised himself by understanding that maybe he wasn't happy. And then they had a chat about what would constitute a perfect day. And I do think that's lovely. Like, it's a lovely genesis for this film. I do think that's
great. And then he got in, had a glass of wine. Groundhog Day was on Channel 5.
Yeah, I mean, it's... We'll do it now. No, I'll wait. All right, so
I'm on tenterhooks.
I know. So, you know, he wants to write about these big things, how to be happy, how to achieve happiness. And then he did loads of research into time travel. No, he didn't. Quote, well, I mean, look, because we've all seen lots of science fiction stuff. I didn't do any research at all. Amazing. Good one, Richard. Not a problem. Obviously, it's fine. There's no logic flaws in this. I mean, it becomes almost pathetic to point out the plot holes. And I only do this to him because he is so beloved and he can get anything away. Now, it might be different now, I don't know. It is a long time ago, this film, and it did do well, but it didn't go fucking crazy. And it's not a Love Actually and it's not a Four Weddings in terms of, like, the canon, if you will. So I don't, you know, is he in the same position as he was 10 years ago where he can go, oh, hello, Eric, hello, Tim, can I make a film? And they go, of course you can.
I think Yesterday did quite well as well.
Oh, fuck, I hate that film! Fine, fuck it. I was going to be nice to him. No. He takes up room that could be being used by someone else. Working title, mate, what, like 5 films a year? They do great shit, but someone else could have a shot.
Right.
It annoys me.
Right.
Let's just get this off my chest now, right?
It's not finished. Okay.
No, 1 second. Richard Curtis's next avatar in the world, Donald Gleeson, whatever, young Hugh Grant. Direct quote from Richard Curtis. Quote, I wasn't aiming for Hugh at all. It's obviously a voice that comes out when I write that part. You lazy, lazy man. Try harder.
It took me about 20 minutes to accept Tim as a character that wasn't Hugh Grant. I was just like, why is he doing the Hugh Grant impression?
It's a literal impression. I do feel sorry for Donald Gleeson. Yeah, I agree with you.
Like I said on Monday,
I think Donald Gleeson does do brilliantly because once you get over it, I think the Hugh Grant impression-ishness wears off after he meets Margot Robbie, who I'd forgotten was in this, and you get into it. And he does really well to stake his claim as an actor and be like, I'm in a Richard Curtis film, certain things are expected of me, i.e. to impersonate Hugh Grant, and I can still push past it.
Yeah, and I think people are like, yeah, fine.
You're forced to do these things.
If you didn't do that, we wouldn't. This movie would have done.
This is the thing. Yeah, that's what we want, isn't it? He does give the people what we want, I guess. So is it us? Yeah. It's not me, but
it's Coca-Cola. It's not good for you.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
I love it.
It doesn't help you, but.
Rachel McAdams is cast after. I read quite an arch comment from Richard Curtis saying, I don't recognise this thing about Zooey Deschanel. But there is a Variety article that's like, she's in talks for, kind of thing. So, it's only a Variety article. What do talks mean? But anyway, she, for whatever reason, that falls away. Richard Curtis, I mean, it's mad to me. Thought that Rachel McAdams would say no because she's done a time travel film. I'm her agent. What am I doing right now? Like, is it funny that you do 2?
4.
4? Like, I don't really get it, but there are things that are going on that I don't understand. So she's still a very bankable actor. We're looking, going right back to Mean Girls. And so doing a shit ton of time travel films is part of the arithmetic there in some way. So what do I know? All right, that's as much as I've got.
Maybe she's trying to tell us something.
She's
you know, like when the X-Files came out and everyone was like, the reason this is on TV is the government are about to announce that aliens exist and we're
I don't remember that, but I love that.
It's a kind of, it's a soft breaking us in. So yeah. We're not like, what?
Like a soft launch for aliens.
Exactly. And maybe Rachel McAdams is the slow burn fact that one day we're going to be told, by the way, Rachel McAdams is going to appear on a podium and go, by the way,
fuck you.
Time travel's real. And we're all going to go, fine, because, well, we've seen you do it, so we kind of know that.
But the point is, one of my favourite lines in Time Traveller's Wife, which I didn't mention, is she's like, I wonder what it's like to be able to be the one that goes rather than the person that stays. It's like, because you never are allowed to go anywhere.
You'll never know. You will, four times over, you'll never know.
It's maddening. Mm. Anyway, that's it. You know, the background to this is Richard Curtis gets to do what the fuck he wants, and we lap it up.
Yep.
That's it.
Sure.
Let's talk.
I can't wait.
All right, I'm just going to flex. All right, so.
A lot of narration.
Yeah. So apparently, I read a quote where Richard Curtis says, when he's in full flow, when he's got an idea and he's sitting down to write, he does about 30 pages a day.
Flipping heck.
And I found that baffling because he still can't nail the old, don't do a narrator thing, though. 30 fucking pages a day.
My problem with this narration is.
Oh, God, don't. Where to start?
My problem with it is the line where Tim talks about Kit Kat and her eternally bare feet. In the previous shot, she was wearing fucking Wellington boots. In the previous shot. You're making a time travel movie, which is going to have plot holes anyway. Don't, in the first minute, throw the cast of doubt over the shadow of doubt over this whole movie by going eternally, but wellies! She was just wearing wellies less than 5 seconds ago.
Yeah, so voiceover, I won't mention it again. Voiceover, fucking lazy. Voiceover that goes, that's me. Prison again. Makes me want to gouge my own eyes out. That's me. Who the fuck else is it? Right? There's other ways of doing that's me.
Okay.
Also, it's not just a voiceover, is it? It's narrated. Mm. It's a running monologue. That's it done. I do not like it. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it's also awful because I again, you mentioned it. I don't recognise this world. Tea on the beach every day. We project films on a Friday night against the wall of our house, no matter what the weather. I'm like, who are you people?
Yeah, what fucking England is this? Like, it's, and also he's 21. So when you meet Tim, he's 21, and then throughout the course of this film, he's like 22-ish, and then he gets married and has kids, and so they do age, but. Every day you have tea with your pet. Every day. You sure about that?
So uncomfortably twee. It makes me feel sick.
It makes me feel sick as well.
Maybe also, it's jealousy. Maybe that world exists. Maybe I'm just like...
We are nowhere near it, if that's the case. And we are nice-ish people.
That is entirely possible. Entirely possible that this world exists and we you and I... Just so far away from ever having a family that goes, shall we do tea on the beach?
Yeah, because also, to bookend it, they do some real people shit at the end, which you've never seen in a Richard Curtis film in your entire life. Like people that you shop at a market and are old and don't look like fucking Margot Robbie or whatever and don't live in this halcyon England. It is part of what we love about his films, in fairness, I think. Like the comfort of...
The fairy tales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, I feel like we've had enough of that. Anyway. Also, isn't Bill Nye a bit old to be his dad? Like, not to be that person, but he's like, oh, dad. And it's like, you're very old. I mean, fine. Whatever. I would say the family themselves are fucking bonkers because, right, lots of red flags here. We go to a New Year's Eve party. Who plays I Will Always Love You at midnight? No one. Everyone plays Auld Lang Syne. Everyone. Even poor people. So I don't understand. What? When? At what party?
You and I just don't know.
Do you think?
At mansions on cliff-tops in Cornwall. Yeah. You bang on, I will always love you.
We'll embarrass ourselves because we'll get invited to a fancy party at midnight. And I was like, oh my God, idiots.
Who invited those
two? Who invited those? Yeah, why have the waiting staff started singing?
We're sorry, your lordship. We didn't realise the rule.
We didn't realise it was meant to be a Whitney Houston, like, wall-to-wall. madness. Anyway,
they are playing Tattoo at one point, though, which I've got a lot of time for. Bit of Tattoo.
It used to be my karaoke special, and then I stopped. I wasn't sure. I didn't know if it was a bit inappropriate.
But, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's all fine.
It's a private room. I shouldn't have said it, really.
I watched them perform at the MTV Movie Awards in 2003 in Los Angeles. They were very good.
Oh, were
very
they? Good. Yeah, well, that's good to know. Yeah. I think Kit Kat, as I said, totally doomed because she's in a Richard Curtis film and she's just a bit wacky. She also does say to her brother, your pyjamas are sexy.
But incest is better!
So she's a wrong one from the start. No, I don't have a brother, but if I did, I wouldn't be telling him his pyjamas are sexy.
Bill Nye, dialed up to 11 in this. This is ultimate Bill Nye.
Ultimate BN, yeah.
It's too much
for me. Is it
too
much for you?
It's so affected. It's like, I don't know whether because he'd done Love Actually, it was like, okay, so you're in another one. You've got to bring even more to this, Bill.
Yeah.
Well, I, you know, it's stumble, rumble, and a tumble, and then Helen of Troy. And you're like, what?
Well, that's a good point. So the family are bonkers because the men can time travel. They can't change history, but presumably, this is just our first flag of like logic. You can't change, you can only go in your own lifetime.
Yep.
So your ancestors could have changed history, though, couldn't they? Because they would have been alive at the same time as Hitler, you doofus.
This is how you end up with a mansion in Cornwall. Yeah. I mean, just I just couldn't believe it. Bill Nye actually has the line. He actually has the line. I've never met a rich person who's happy.
Mm.
And you're like, you are saying that standing in this 27 bedroomed house looking out to sea on a clifftop. Never met a rich person who was happy. What are you then? Yeah. What is rich to you?
But that does show us in our place in the world. Because he's like, I'm like, you retired at 50. You're fucking lauded. Like, yeah, but there's another world that we don't know about that Richard Curtis lives in. That he's like, this is completely normal and they're actually struggling.
I know about it.
Do you? You don't.
I've seen it.
You've seen it. What,
I've been
from
in
the
it.
Out, you're pressed against the glass.
I've been in it once. I didn't like it. They spotted me a mile off.
They made you feel bad about yourself.
Idiot!
There's a great old Rob Newman joke from the Mary Whitehouse Experience Encyclopedia where he talks about, you know, how if you're a working class person, whenever you meet a girl who's posh, you suddenly become the local village grocer going, I've got a lettuce here, a lovely lettuce for his lordship if you want to take it up to the manor house.
Well, I've never been inside that world, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
I think Mark's posh, and I'm sure he's not. But
it's designed to be uncomfortable. So we're going to have a dinner party, and you're going to sit boy, girl, and it's fantastically next to a stranger. So you meet someone new. And you're like, well, I don't want
to do that.
I came with a person. I'd rather talk. I don't want
to sit with my friend.
Jesus Christ! I was at one, and like the guy, it was a lord. He was hosting this party, and in his own words, he was like, I've hired some of the children from the village to be the waiting staff tonight.
They weren't
like,
real actual children.
They were young people. They weren't like actual kids. Got furious because like someone served him from the right and he was like, bloody hell.
Jesus.
Do you see that? You're meant to serve from the left. Or it's the other way around. I don't know.
Who the fuck knows?
He
it's
knew.
Not important.
He knew. Oh, he knew and he was not happy. And I don't know whether it was the gout, but he went red.
It's just upsetting. It's upsetting. So what does Tim want? This line just made me feel so gross. He's got this gift. The gift, it. What could it do? It could help me get a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yuck. Mm-hmm. Don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really weird scene coming up now. This is peak Curtis. And it's just peak why I'm so annoyed with it. Because as a cultural export, he's huge. The Americans know him, and so we do. I put a lot on him to show our best selves, represent all of us in some way, which is not fair on him. Obviously, he's just doing his thing and he's super happy. But Tim tries to proposition Margot Robbie, and he goes, "Can I ask you a question?" And she goes, "Oh, it's not about love, is it?" Said what 20-year-old girl ever in her? Your sister told me if it was about love, I should not answer you. What the fuck is going on? What happened to do you fancy a shag? What happened to that? Am I going mental?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't, I like, Margot, how, I think, I honestly think it's quite an achievement to make Margot Robbie as an actor unlikable.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe he's done it. Like, it's quite an achievement. I mean, that is some serious, there's some work gone into that writing because she is unlikable, this character.
She's so annoying. And then it's that classic Richard Curtis thing of later on, she'll just be besotted with him because Richard Curtis, nothing's any different, but now she's into him. Yeah. To the point where she even sacks off her friend. She goes, I've told her to get dinner by herself.
Is this the same friend who she knows is gay?
Yeah.
And when Tim assumes she's gay, goes, did you think I was gay?
Oh my God, Richard Curtis, hang your head in shame.
It's like, but you know your friend, what? And you know, like, even if that's an awful thing to say, full stop, when you're standing next to your gay friend.
In the scene, it doesn't work.
Don't say, you thought I was gay.
Yeah, like this gross lesbian next to me. Are you joking? Have you seen me? That's what it is.
It's
I'm too pretty to be a lesbian. That's the joke, and that is not on. Bad, bad man. Sorry, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take a breath because I think I'm going purple, so we'll have a break.
Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Honestly, I'm sweating. I'm so angry. I'm sweating. So, as you've said, Tim does his literal impression of Hugh Grant. Whatever, let's just get that done. And then he says, I moved to London and I had this weird moment where I hate him so much and I love London so much. I was like, you moved to London and we will destroy you, Tim. You wet tissue. You awful, weak person thing. Which is really unfair and a little bit over the top.
You couldn't get to him. It's a different world. Like you said, well, no, you're never going to cross paths with Tim.
No, I'm not.
You're never going to. He walks into a successful playwright's house and has a room.
I mean, obviously, Tom Hollander as whatever the playwright's
Harry.
Called. Harry. He's brilliant, but he's always good, so...
He's good, but it's almost like everything in this movie is just too Curtis.
Yeah.
It's like he's too nasty. It's like it's funny to be the sarky best friend,
yeah.
But like he's actually horrible.
Yeah.
Like I mean, he goes, I think your dad's a cock. Like the first thing he says to Tim as he's walking up the stairs, he's like, why don't you shag my daughter? Everyone else has.
That's so, I forgot about that. It's like, God, that's weird.
It's like this is bad.
That's really bad, yeah.
He's just
and
too
also,
much.
This whole slagging of Tim's mum, by Tim a lot, but then this is the trouble. Rich Curtin's a brilliant joke writer, so the joke when Harry says to Tim, does your mum still look like Andy Warhol? Funny. That's mm-hmm. funny. I laughed my head off. But poor old Lindsay Duncan, who is she's ephemeral and incredible, and Tim is like, my mum's a bit stout and my mum's a bit sturdy, and I know she represents Middle England in that way, but it's just to keep slagging off your own mum, you're supposed to be a nice guy. I find that a bit hard to buy. Anyway, this is one of my favourite bits. So Tim is a lawyer and the law is full of men. A, no, it's not, you prick. And B, if it is, you're not allowed to lament the glass ceiling because it stops you from hooking up. Be an ally. Oh, the law is full of men. I will advocate for women to be in law rather than being like, I can't get a shag. Gross. Not acceptable. Anyway.
Thank God for Rory, though.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He actually
yeah.
seems nice. He's
nice.
A character who I've
yeah, he's the nice but dim, but he's...
But yeah, but also there are other characters that are supposed to be nice that are not nice in this movie. And he's actually, he comes out of this clean.
He does, you're absolutely right. So then a really boring scene in a dark restaurant. So dull.
Right, let's talk about this.
Go on.
Because I think this scene is fascinating.
Do you?
Because it's awful.
Is it meant to be a dating? It's just a normal restaurant where you go to have dinner.
Have you not heard of these places? These places, but it's basically supposed to make...
Because it tastes...
Obviously, you weren't moving the same circles as me. I went with Richard Curtis. And it's supposed to make the taste different.
Yeah.
So they actually exist. It's a real thing.
Okay.
I think they were big at the
time. Do you
time.
Get harassed by two dudes?
No, not unless you get sat next to men who have basically been told their entire lives that the world is theirs. And have the confidence to exact that on you if they find themselves sitting next to you, regardless of who you are or whether you're having a private conversation, they have the confidence to basically hit on you because they've been told the world is theirs.
Relentlessly.
Which is what happens.
Yeah.
But that's not the reason I love this scene. The reason I love this scene is because it's so, so awful, and it just shows how awful the dialogue is in this film.
Oh, interesting.
Because you cannot see actors charm their way through these lines because of their faces. And I sat there watching it going, there you go.
Yeah.
That's what this dialogue is. Without Donald Gleeson, without Rachel McAdams, you are just left with this awful dialogue that you can't see them make work.
That's amazing. I hadn't thought of it at all because it doesn't work. You go, okay, this is Mary, played by Rachel McAdams. She's charmed to bits by Tim because it's a Richard Curtis movie. So you're like, okay, this has to happen. I hadn't twigged that. Why am I so bored? Why am I so disengaged from this scene? Because, yeah, you're right. You don't get to see, you know, good-looking people act the shit out of it to make it palatable.
Right.
So this is... I think this might be my favourite moment of any film. So because this is the thing, you know, you hate what you love, you love what you hate. I'm enjoying myself enormously when I'm watching this, but I'm also seething so much that I can't see straight. So... Rachel McAdams, the big reveal, she's twisting on the spot like she's not a fucking, like a straight 10 and he's a 6 at best. And then she says, you really like me. Jesus Christ. But then the old 1-2, whatever. I can't even do it. My hair isn't too brown. What? Who's ever said that? You look like Rachel McAdams, but fine, you're meant to be a normal person. Who has gone, do you really like me? Oh, my hair isn't too brown. None of it makes any sense.
She's American as well. You like me? Even my frock. Even my frock.
I don't feel comfortable with a man making a woman have to be... Right, in this film, the women are coy like this. Is my hair too brown? Or they're mad, or they're prostitutes, not my words. What's that? Why can't... Oh, I'm coming off the back of all the feelings about Love Actually. Like, what's your problem, dudes? I don't get it. Richard Curtis is straight. He has a girlfriend. It makes no sense to me that he represents women in this way. He's never met anyone like this, really. He just can't have done. No one says, is my hair too brown? Even people who think their hair is too brown, whatever that is meant to mean.
Like I said, this is too Curtis.
Yes,
it isn't far off Curtis doing a parody of himself.
I know. And yet he will have been paid handsomely.
Is my hair too brown? But she goes through a list. How about my frock? How about my hair colour? What about my fringe? It's new. I think it's meant to be like, she's a bit insecure, Mary. Oh. That's what it's meant to be. But it's like, do that in other ways. In fact, you've got Rachel McAdams there. She can maybe act it.
Yeah.
How about that?
There's an old adage that you might not have heard when you tuned out from the Don't Use a Voiceover lesson, which is called Show, Don't Tell. Oh, anyway, next favourite bit. So we have mentioned this because Tim has erased their number. He goes to the restaurant to get her details and it absolutely feels like if the girls hadn't paid in cash and been walk-ins, the maitre d' would have given some man their details, even though he calls one of them a nice prostitute, not my words. The maitre d' is like, God, I'm sorry, dude, I can't help you. It's mad.
And that's because he goes like this. I'd like to have that number, please.
It's like,
I'm scared of you because I don't... You know, you could probably sue me if I don't give you it.
It's such a male view of the world, like a Richard Curtis male view of the world, which is like, it's quite cute that he goes to get her details, whereas everyone else is like, that's horrifying.
Crazy, scary.
Yeah, but the maitre d' is like, I would if I could. Mm. But it's not even a GDPR thing. It's like, it's just call the police. Awful. Anyway, Kate Moss exhibition. I don't even know what to do with this, right?
So this we've jumped over a bit that is quite good.
Go on.
But it's completely pointless. And actually, it's to me the first plot hole that I'm like, I don't understand what's happening here.
Okay.
So he's lost her number because he helps Harry make his play a success by going and telling Richard Griffiths to rehearse the lines. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out it wasn't him.
It was Richard.
Granny didn't know them. And then he holds it. Rather than go back in time and not do Richard Griffiths, but do Richard E. Grant with the same lesson, he turns up with cardboard. He loves men holding signs with stuff on.
Oh, God, I hadn't even thought. Oh, God.
He loves men holding signs with stuff on.
This is a man, bear in mind, that writes 30 pages a day. So did he not? I've done that. Annoying!
So, he's lost her number because he's helped Harry.
Yeah.
Now, why can he not go back and do the noir night again? And if it's because he can't do both...
I think that's true, yeah.
Right, if he can't do both, why the fuck is he helping Harry, who's been an absolute dick to him from the moment they met? Why is he helping Harry over finding true love?
Yep, don't know. Good question.
Okay.
Don't know. I suppose he's just a nice dude.
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure.
So then...
Kate Moss.
So this is... I will say now, you're going to come on this journey with me. By the end of this film, I do like this film, genuinely, not just because I hate it kind of thing. And this is where it starts. So Tim is annoying the living shit out of me again. Can I walk around with you because I'm lonely? Can you fuck off, please? Please. But then Claire has got a boyfriend. And I like that for her because this whole do you like me thing is clearly bullshit because in this timeline, she's just gone and got a boyfriend. Like, she's not that insecure. Like, you don't just, you know.
You ever met anyone in real life called Rupee? Because I bet there are people out there whose name's Rupert, but they're known among their friends as Rupee.
Even if they're 20-something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I'd forgotten about it. I just glazed over because I can't bear that. I can't.
Rupee, pass the pheasant.
Rupee. So, now, Tim then wants to break up Claire and her boyfriend, so he uses her own quite mad nonsense about Kate Moss. Ridiculous. I love... Like,
look what I've written. Look what I've written here. It's awful. This is awful.
Yeah, you have written that. I've seen you
I had nothing else. No. I was just like, I was sitting there going, this is so awful.
It's so weird. It's a man so divorced from reality. He must be friends with Kate Moss. I assume he is.
Yeah.
People do love Kate Moss. And obviously we love photographs of Kate Moss. But it's a weird thing we don't really talk about it, do we? Because Kate Moss, I think, occupies a space where she has quite a lot of agency given the career she's in, but not really. She is the object. Do you know what I mean? Mm. She is photographed. She's not the photographer. But it's so weird to talk about someone who is photographed to expect me to digest that the power is suddenly flipped and she was in control of any of that, mm. especially the early days. Sorry, that's really heavy.
Sure.
It's mental, though.
Sure.
It's just Richard Curtis going, the British people like Kate, Americans like Kate Moss, mm. bingo. I just find it so weird.
I put Kate Moss in the Blackadder Time Travel special, so fuck it.
But also, I like, you know, in a rom-com, and especially a time travel one, it's fine to have the bit. It's not a MacGuffin, it's like a placeholder scene where it's like, he does the thing that wins her over. It's a little bit creepy that it's her own stuff. Do you know what I mean?
A little bit?
Yeah.
Isn't it massively creepy?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I go back to the line earlier where Tim says, it turns out no amount of time travel can make someone fall in love with you.
Yep.
And like I said, I think I said it on Monday, actually, hmm. this is Curtis's get-out clause here, which suggests that love is completely nothing to do with the time travel aspect of this movie.
Yep.
These are inconveniences. Tim's made decisions that have kind of messed stuff up.
Yep.
But ultimately, even if he couldn't time travel, those two would have ended up together because they are in love.
Yeah,
that's what we're meant to think here. Watching this, though, where he repeats her lines back to her, which he shouldn't know if he couldn't time travel, creepy AF.
And so specific. Mm. She must be thinking, that's an internal monologue I've had, and that's private. So anyway, pretty soon, we're at a problematic-ish, I think, because I'm not going to go like full tilt,
okay,
sex scene.
Right.
So I have read an interview with Richard Curtis where, quote, he says this scene fulfills a personal dream of his because he never has one-night stands and never would have had a one-night stand because he knows it would have gone so badly. So he wrote this scene to fulfill a personal dream, which makes it really bad, I think. So I think it's gross.
Pervert, pervert, pervert.
Tim's crap in bed. Just, let's not get hung up on that. Let's get hung up on making a woman say, an American woman as well, I thought it was pretty lovely. No one says pretty lovely. And if you'd ever met anyone in real life, who says that? I thought it was lovely is fine, even though you shouldn't make a woman have to say that kind of bullshit. That, just give me a minute. I'm so angry. I'm so angry. She has been unsatisfied by this encounter and he makes a woman go, don't worry about it. Why can't she say, give 2 minutes and we'll just give it another shot or whatever. Like, why can't she have her pleasure? Why does she have to pretend it was pretty lovely? Oh, I'm furious. Okay, so then he goes back in time. He refines his efforts. Now, time number three, he's a little pushy. So I'm not, it's fine. The consent has been given at some point in time, but it's a bit much.
The problem with this scene is, and this is why I was saying, Richard Curtis, watch Groundhog Day. Because this is the lift from Groundhog Day when Bill Murray is trying to win over Andy McDowell and he's tried so many times and he's rushing it. By the third or fourth time, he's just yeah. trying to get through it because he wants to get to the bit where they kiss.
Yeah.
And in that scene, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because that's a really good film. And it's like he's just yeah. trying to get to that point and he's lost the minutiae, the micro expressions, the tiny moments that make something like that unique and special and you feel it. And he's rushing it. And in this, it's the same conceit. And yet here, it works.
Works brilliantly.
It's the opposite. But that scene in Groundhog Day is so famous. You're watching this going, oh, it's going to get worse because
yeah.
she's not going to like it because he's being pushy.
Yeah.
He's trying to rush it. And it doesn't happen. It's like, by the end, it's like, that was amazing. That's the yep. way to do it.
And also, I'm so sick of seeing, but I'll throw over to you because you tell me.
I'm scared.
These middle-class men who didn't know how to undo a bra when they were 16 now think that no one knows that. And it's just the thing of like, oh, bumbling, oh, sorry, cold hands or whatever. Everybody knows how to undo a bra. Am I right?
I believe so, yeah.
Right, good. It's so fucking old school to be like, can't do the bra. And then she's like, tricked you because it's a front fastener.
Sure.
Anyway. Also,
maybe their partners just take it off for them. Maybe that's how
I was surprised.
Works.
To be honest, not to be too saucy, but she's like, I'm going to put
when
on.
Are
my...
you ever too saucy?
She said, I'm going to put on my pajamas, and you're like,
oh my
okay.
god,
okay.
This
so
line.
Then when she's like, I was like, you literally did put on pajamas. When you say, I thought she was going to slip into something a little more comfortable.
No, she says, I'm going to put on my new pajamas, and then in 1 minute, mm-hmm. you can come in and take them off.
Yeah, what's the point? Also, if you've put on pajamas, not to be a stickler, why are you wearing a bra? You've put on pajamas. I just found it. And then when I saw her in those little striped pyjamas, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, you're supposed to say, I'm going to put this on, see you in a minute. It's going to be brilliant. Yeah. It's not like comfy pyjamas.
I mean, it's that moment where you go, do you actually want me to leave? Because it feels,
I thought we were going to have
it
sex.
It feels like you want to go to bed.
You put a bed t-shirt on, so I'm very confused.
You're sending really mixed messages.
Yeah,
now.
And you've still got your bra on, so I'm going to assume you don't want to do it. But also, again, the dialogue thing. And this, I do this because as we get, when forgetting the fact that it's a monologue, but the monologue later, some of the monologue is amazing. So then when he's poor at the dialogue, it just annoys me because he's obviously capable of being brilliant. So they've had sex three times. They're on the floor now. And she's like, oh, one time's enough for my dream guy. Date number one. Who says shit like that? No one. And it just puts the parrot. It's so annoying.
Run.
Yeah. Run for your life, Tim, even though you're a cock. Run, run, run. Because also, it's everything that happens. It's like, she's like, you're my dream guy. He doesn't say, oh, you're my dream. Whatever. I found it irritating. Anyway, there's going to be a sea change now because this is a cute montage, right?
It's got a big problem, this montage.
The song is a big problem.
But why do you think that's a big problem? I'll tell you why.
I hate that song.
Right. But also, this is a time travel movie where people live the same day sometimes over and over again.
Yeah.
If you have a montage where the band are playing the same song, except your cast are wearing different clothes,
yeah,
it makes you think, is this the same day over and over again?
True.
Or is this a passage of time? You can't have the same band on the same subway station playing the same song.
Yeah,
and it makes no sense in a time travel movie.
True. Yeah, really good point.
Apart from that, this song is shit.
I hate this song so much, but it's working on me because I do hate this song, and I'm mad as hell about everything I've seen. I'm smiling now at this point. I'm like, that's cute. I do think it's cute. I do, you know, I like a rom-com and I do think it's super cute. Now, I'm on a high there, but then I'm brought right back down because Tim's homophobic and there's no need for it. Who in their early 20s is like, you should be careful because some of us have got traditional values or whatever. What the fuck?
But as a way of clearing up his earlier faux pas, he's already made one faux pas,
yep,
by going, oh, okay, you're a girlfriend.
Brilliant.
And then he's like, did you just call me gay? Weird, weird, weird moment. But who are you, Tim?
Yeah.
How did you end up with Mary as well?
Yeah, good point. But in Richard Curtis films, none of it's ever explained.
Sure.
In Four Weddings works because Hugh Grant was this juggernaut all of a sudden, and you just like, fine. But everything else, it doesn't work, does it? Like, oh. I'm trying to think of a good example.
Groundhog Day works because obviously Bill Murray's punching in that, but yeah, he's Bill Murray. He's funny. Yeah.
So now Charlotte, she's banging to him for no reason because Richard Curtis wrote this. But that does prompt the proposal. I mean, she's well into him. She's like, come back to my lovely flat apartment and please have sex with me. And it makes him run back to Mary, which it should.
Good. I was liking this. I'm like, good.
I like the proposal. It's weird.
No.
No, I like it in that. I think the button worked for me. It's so silly that he's got the band in the room, but it did make me chuckle.
Sure. I mean, if I'm Rory and I've been invited back and I'm halfway through opening a bottle of champagne and then I'm told to leave, I'm taking that champagne.
Yeah, I do think that's fine. So although I like the proposal, I do not enjoy the strip to make wedding decisions. It's grim, though. Isn't it grim? No one, neither of them come out of that very well.
So for every decision you make, I'll remove an item of clothing.
Gross. So why am I so grossed out by that? I'm not grossed out by the nakedness or whatever. It's such a immature thing to do for two people who are about to get married. They should have been having plenty sex. Mm. So we're past that stage. But also what it says on a surface level, which is you can't get a man to make a decision about something, but the way you can do that is through leveraging the power of your body. That's upsetting to me. But also she doesn't come out of it well because honestly, if a woman, a grown-ass woman, calls her own boobs puppies, but she's not being funny, you should run for your life. It's a big no. Who does that? No one. So then we move into...
I can't deal with the table tennis match as well with him and his dad. It gave me bad goosebumps.
But like, everyone who likes this film loves that moment.
It's just the commentary, like, yeah, father and son,
yeah,
playing. It's just like...
Yeah, a little bit of a casual racism against Chinese players, yep, for whatever, 2013. Mm. So second half of this movie now... Sorry, second half of Act 2, I think... Super interesting as a writing exercise because, as we've said, no obvious story even, really, mm-hmm, but definitely no conflict,
yep,
and definitely no drama.
Very, very little conflict. very little conflict.
There's zero conflict.
I can't believe what I'm watching. I'm just watching people. It's almost like watching a reality show about people's lives.
Yeah.
And if they cut out all the drama, it's just like you're just watching people exist.
But it's also quite meta because you're in a Richard Curtis film and you've met Kit Kat and she wears purple and she runs barefoot in wellies or whatever. You know something's going to happen there because she's that character in a Richard Curtis film. So even though you're watching a story with no conflict, you know that's going to kick off in a minute because she represents a trope.
Yeah.
This is super meta to get away with a story engine through your catalogue of shit you've done before.
Right.
No?
Sure.
Madness.
Yeah.
Anyway. But it is quite nice to watch their wedding because I do like a wedding comedy, so that's fine.
Raining.
Is it raining? I hadn't noticed. He's spoofing himself. Literally spoofing
that's
himself.
I said. Yeah. It's Curtis Starr up to 11. Yeah. He is parodying his earlier work. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's genius. It's fascinating. But you have a rainy wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I missing here? It's like, you're a time traveler and you could you not do the wedding? But I don't see the point of having a wet wedding.
No.
Other than you're watching a lot of people get wet and that is inherently funny.
It's quite funny.
Okay, fine. That's it then. Because I was like, okay, but they're going to do it again and it's going to be a beautiful, blissful, sunny day.
Rachel McAdams, Claire, what's she even called?
Mary.
Mary.
Is she?
Jesus, she's called Mary.
Right.
She's so nothing. She's like, I wouldn't change a thing. Now then. So then Bill Nighy gives the most amazing best man speech and now I'm fucking bewitched and this Richard Curtis motherfucker has got me, which really annoys me.
Is this the first one or the one where he goes back and does it again?
When he does it again. So now, to break it down, it only works because Richard Curtis has invented quite a paper-thin character, which is he doesn't hug his son. He's not physical with him. He's emotionally connected to him, but he's not physical with him and he doesn't tell him he loves him, which is a bit mental anyway. So you build to these parceling out of little pieces of emotion so that you've got a story engine, which is they will finally have a kiss, which is the real big moment of the film. However, it does work. It works on me because of Bill Nighy massively. I just thought it was
I'm too far gone at this point. I'm not completely far gone, as we'll come to later. This film, fuck it, does manage to get its hooks
into
me.
It's mad, isn't it?
But I'm not there yet. I'm still quite angry at just watching people having a nice day.
Yeah. So then they have a baby, and again, the narration got me, you know, talking about people who love them loving their child and the indifference of friends. That is like, you don't really hear much about that, and it is an experience that people go through where their friends, it is hard to connect with someone when they've had a baby because they've got this thing in their life, which is, you know, on the outside, it's just annoying, obviously, even as much as you might like the baby, but it makes the people that have had the baby really hard to talk to because you've got no idea what they're going through.
Well, what's worse is whenever they bring up their baby, you bring up your dog, as I discovered. It's like, the little baby's doing well. Oh, Simon's doing well as well. Right, did you just compare my baby to your dog? I'm like,
just
I did.
To remember, we're not talking about me. I think people think that's me.
No,
that
God, no.
That is not me.
No. That's,
you're allowed to compare.
That's at least three other people.
There's something wrong with me, maybe. So then I read another quote from Richard Curtis, which made me more mad but this is unfair on him, because this is about being mad with him as a person, right? There was going to be a scene in here, a sequence where, and I was like, if this is really your life, then I kind of forgive you, because this is such hack nonsense that never really happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was going to be a section where her waters have broken, they get in the car, but what happens? He doesn't know the way to the hospital, does he? And she shouts at him, you had one job. How many millions of times have you seen that in a film or on TV, but it doesn't really happen in real life? Not because partners don't know the way to the hospital. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But it's so cliche to go, you had one job. I've done all the heavy lifting. You can't even get us to the hospital.
Right.
I hate, you know, as much as I rally against sexism against women in films like this, the stuff about men are idiots and they can't fucking do anything. It doesn't do any of us any good to be like, you bumbling off, you couldn't even get to the hospital. But that's Richard Curtis's real life experience. So who am I to denigrate that? He says that happened to him. And then I think, Jesus, you do just live in that world. Like, you either have created it, so your girlfriend is forced to say stupid shit like that to you when you're going to the hospital.
Always working.
Yeah.
Always working.
But there was going to be a bit which I would have liked where they end up on Abbey Road, because he sets up Abbey Road, doesn't he, where he lives, and there's a traffic jam and he gets out of the car and he has to do one of the Beatles poses to get the people off the zebra crossing, which I think would have been all right. Anyway, that got cut.
Good.
So poor old dude.
It really is long enough.
Yeah. So she smashes herself to bits, and then Tim takes her time travelling to not meet her shitty boyfriend. That apparently will solve all their problems. Time for a random rule. So.
Can you just break this rule down for me?
It's
because
bad.
I fundamentally don't understand it, which makes the rest of this movie quite difficult to enjoy.
I had to rewind it because I was like, I don't get it.
I'm struggling with what happens here. So tell me.
So you can't go back before your baby was born, but in Bill Nye's words, when it comes out, because if you go back before that point, you'll get a different baby. And he goes, oh, because of when the sperm meets the egg. So that makes no sense about why it's when the baby comes out. The baby that's created is the same one that's going to come out. Nothing happens.
But so Tim has done that. He's travelled back before his baby's birth.
Yes.
And then he comes back to the future and Kit Kat's fine, but his baby's changed into a boy.
Yeah. And it's not his, it is his baby, but it's not the one he's familiar with.
Right. So how does he then undo that?
Oh God, what does he do? It's bad because she then forgets about, oh, he goes back and doesn't go back. Wait. Yeah. He goes back and doesn't go back. Is that how it works?
Listen to the sentence you're saying. He goes back and he doesn't go back.
So I think what he must do, although it undoes everything, is he goes back to the party, the New Year's Eve party,
right,
and makes sure that Kit Kat and Jimmy do meet.
But we don't see that.
We don't see that.
Right, okay.
No. And
so
it resets the timeline.
That resets everything.
Whatever.
Okay, even though minute things may have changed, the butterfly effect.
The literal butterfly effect, even though we've been told that doesn't happen here.
Right.
In this film,
yeah,
categorically, you cannot, butterfly effect, don't worry about it.
Yeah, we can't change anything.
We can't change anything but apart from when he changes her whole life.
But then immediately after that, he unchanges it.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I mean, not fine.
Not fine.
Absolutely awful.
Very, very bad.
Understood. And also, because he goes back, he kills this child. This baby ceases to exist.
Yes. Okay. I don't know what happens to that baby.
Well, that's the multiverse, isn't it? It's like, is there another
timeline? It's all right somewhere
where he's never there. Like, he just vanishes one day to be with his other family.
Yeah.
And Mary doesn't know she's left with this boy to raise alone. Fine.
Maybe. So then we're going to mend Kit Kat the normal way, which is someone that's got serious dependency issues on bad men and has turned to drink as a result of being shut out of the best thing that could possibly have happened to her because she's a woman. What you do, just bedside vigil until they say the right words, and that, in Richard Curtis's world, means they're fixed. So she's like, I need to give up drinking. They're like, job done, you're now fine, because people don't lie to get out of hospital. It's so patronising to do it anyway. I think he's brave for a Richard Curtis film because he doesn't really do this. He's like, people are a bit quirky. Someone's clearly got fucking dementia, and that's just, isn't that sweet?
Until you said that in the introduction, I didn't know. I wasn't thinking.
It's just quirky Englishness, isn't it? We do it all the time.
That's what I thought it was. I just don't understand. Literally, other than the funny lines, in inverted commas, that Uncle Desmond says, I don't understand his purpose in the movie because all the men can time travel. I honestly thought there was going to be some reveal later on that you have to stop time traveling because Uncle Desmond did it too much.
And lost his mind.
Yeah. But it's like, can he time travel? What has he done? Is this connected to him time traveling? What's his story? He time travels as well? He doesn't know because he's stupid?
It's just this thing of like, the Englishness of it, of like this long-term serious health condition that is devastating to families and the patient alike, is codified in front of us as eccentricity. And we've done that for hundreds of years where you're like, oh, someone's gone a bit mad and we've shut them in the attic kind of thing. Whereas he could have help and whatever. But it's baffling to me. It's just not my world, I guess. Also, the way that Kit Kat can really become normal is to go out with Tim's mate. Mm. Find that a bit patronising. Like, the way to be normal is to just get a different boyfriend, not try being by yourself for a while.
Sure, sure, sure. And also, Tim just basically goes about Jay. And she goes, oh, yeah, never thought of that. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, brother.
Because
thanks, sexy brother.
I would never have worked that out on my own. And I'm incapable of finding love alone. But your friend Jay's
You'll
available.
You'll provide me with someone who looks exactly like you, which is also not mentioned. They have another baby.
Yeah, sorry, Tim. I had a kid with another woman, Jay, over there. So I guess half brother. Maybe, I don't know. Rumble, tumble, stumble.
So then a little bit of plot. They have another baby. Claire gets ready for a big night out with Ian McEwan, I actually think.
Yeah.
Fifth mention of prostitute. Makes Rachel McAdams do it this time, though, so that levels it out. Do I look like a prostitute? Jesus Christ, man. Like, that is not good.
Everyone gets a shot.
But because there's no story, this is, you'll see this in so many films. If you've got an maybe a slightly older character and it's a parent, this is, you could, on the money to the minute, the parent's going to die here. It's this High Fidelity, for instance. Like, it just gives you a little bit of propulsion to get you through the final act. It's just classic timing.
But he's not actually dead at this point.
No.
He's just ill.
He's had a prognosis.
She's got diagnosis. She's got a dinner with her biggest client.
Yeah.
Cancel that. Dad's a little bit ill. So, yeah. So well, we'll find out. It's terminal, but he's got time left. Leave in the morning. No. Take that shit off and get in the car. We're driving to Cornwall. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. But her career doesn't mean anything because she's a nothing. So it doesn't matter that she stood up Ian McEwan.
You read. Like, that's your job. Like a prostitute.
Yeah, I didn't get that because in Richard Curtis's world, that's the best job in the world.
Sure.
Because it's reading and it's books and it's adjacent to and it's super middle class. So when Tim was like, what? All you do is read. He's like, I'm breathing.
We've got two people who both their passions in this are reading. She reads for a job. Tim's dad, like, has spent time travelling reading.
Yeah.
Like, and there's no sort of connection there. It's not like...
He's like,
You're like, you're literary.
Yeah. Oh, great. My dad loves books.
Agent. And you're like, just mention it.
So, also, am I wrong? We can ask the listeners. Tim's like, I'm a lawyer. You see him in court. You're not a barrister. Like, he's wearing the wig and he's done the thing. Isn't that what a barrister does? I don't know. I'm not a solicitor. But someone help me out there. Anyway, where are we? So he's got weeks to live. Dad does. And then this is the real love story, and I do mean that in a nice way. So this father and son thing, this passing down of the secret, you know, live every day and do it again to notice things, be grateful. And this just get me, just really get, it didn't get me at the time, gets me now, just a bit older and a bit sort of more aware of stuff like that.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, I don't know. The only way to do it is if you relive the same day. And then in the end, sort of Tim goes, I'm never going to relive the same day again. And you're like, okay, well...
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
I think he learns to notice, maybe.
Right, okay.
It is funny. I suppose this is Richard Curtis being like, he's so normal. Showing him being ungrateful for his day is going to Pret and ignoring someone.
Right. What is that scene? So... Is the scene that he didn't smile?
He didn't look at her.
She's
been super nice. Like, everyone in Pret is contractually obliged to be super nice to you the whole time.
Not the one by the famous cock.
Are they not?
No, they are.
That's worth knowing.
No,
they're always like, hey, how are you? You're like,
they were frustrated because apparently no one works in Pret at around 3 o'clock on a Tuesday. So there was a queue about 10 deep with one person serving and one person making coffees. And you're like,
sorry about this.
Yeah. Not really sort of fast food.
She's super nice to him. He ignores her. And then the camera is on her face for the second time round. So he's just being mindful and thankful and all the rest. That's the scene. I mean, it's mad, that's mad, but that's what it is.
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah.
Being nice to someone in Pret.
He smiles at her.
Yes.
And that's him being nice.
Yes, that's
because
him.
Her day would have otherwise been ruined.
Exactly.
If he hadn't.
Such a good point. She's like, oh, he was nice to me. She's paid to do
it. It's changed her day.
It really
maybe
has.
Maybe I'm just being a cynic now because this movie's driven me to it. Maybe smile at strangers, just not on the tube.
Exactly. He goes back for one last game of table tennis, which I know you hate.
I do.
He goes back for one last game and then he's like, his dad's like, oh, is this it kind of thing? But then we do repeat that because we've got this stupid bullshit rule that makes no sense. Claire's baby's about to pop out, which means Tim's got one last chance to go back. Because when it pops out, it's different. Not when sperm meets egg, which is actually makes medical sense,
yep.
But whatever. So he goes back for the last time to say goodbye. And it's Tim as a boy and his dad. And they're sitting on that stupid beach and throwing stones. And the monologue, we should relish this remarkable life. Tears, crying. I'm not
you.
Crying. I am. Yes, I am crying
Fine.
My eyes out.
Okay, good. Because I absolutely hated myself in this moment. I'm like, how has... How has Curtis
done
that to me?
Yeah.
I was on my own. I was like a mad person, like shouting at traffic, except it was this movie. I was just, shut up, this movie. Honestly, I just a scroll. Look at this. Awful. Vomit. That's all I've written. I'm just like, I hate this. And then this final scene, I'm just like, oh, my God, this might be the most beautiful thing I've ever fucking seen in my whole life. It's just like, they're on the beach and they're playing. It's the last time they'll see each other. And I couldn't believe it.
It's beautiful.
I felt manipulated, and yet I couldn't stop crying. It was the weirdest experience.
I know. I mean, this is the thing. And the fact that, and this is me saying this, the fact that it is narration is great. It's so cheeky.
You wouldn't have minded if he'd gone, that's me. With my dad on the last day.
That's me.
I'd ever see
him. Oh, is it? Yeah, so there we are. That's the end of the film. He's done a number on us because that shit works. Mm. And it shouldn't, and it's cheap. And it makes me livid, as has been proven throughout the duration of this piece of content. Mm. But we are where we are. This is a great film.
It's the George Lucas thing. When he was once asked about Star Wars, it's like, make the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes. Yeah. Chris was saying it the other day, first 10 minutes, last 10 minutes, good. What you do in the middle doesn't matter.
No one cares.
I mean, apparently, Richard Curtis has taken that a step further. It's just the last 10 minutes. In fact, it's the last 2 minutes. Everything before that can be dross. Yep. And as long as they're crying when they walk out, people are going to say,
I've done my job.
What a movie.
Yeah, I know. It's mental.
What a movie.
So let's do the bits, shall we? What's your best scene?
We just did it. I hate it. I can't believe it managed to do it. Like I said, felt manipulated, but I am only human. And those tears, they just came. And I couldn't control them. It wasn't even like little sort of dabbing my eyes going, you're not going to get me.
Full.
Just
straight
down the
silent.
Face. Yeah, yeah.
Possibly because Mark was sitting next to me and I didn't want to admit I was crying at this. But, you know, when you're just streaming.
You've rubbed an onion in your face.
Yeah. And I've got to tell, because obviously I wear glasses when I'm watching telly, and I try to keep it in, but I know I've got to lift my glasses up to get rid of the tears because they're like gobbing in my mouth. So Mark can see when I've lifted, and then sometimes I'm like, I've just got an itchy eye, but then I'm like,
So yeah, I will say, and you mentioned this already, what this makes you realise is this film isn't the rom-com that it was marketed as at all. It should not be about Mary and Tim. No. It's a father and son learning how to connect story.
Yeah.
That's what this film is.
And that's the best bit of it.
Yeah.
So that's the last scene is also my favourite. I do also like, though, a shout out for, because it's rom-com kind of like bread and butter, their walk home pre the problematic shag. That I think has captured that in a very him way of like, you're really into someone and you just keep talking and then you're like, oh, look, we've walked for ages. But then she lives above a vintage shop, and so it lost all the points for me, because it's like, rent in London is expensive. You definitely haven't got your own flat. Where are you? Somewhere, probably West London, obviously.
I think it is because I read the tube sign. It's Maida Vale.
It is Maida Vale. Mm. And the fact that she lives above a vintage shop is just like blurg. Like, that's meant to telegraph all these things that she's timeless and cute and quirky and fuck off. So I didn't pick that scene. There we go. So what's your most valuable whatever?
Tom Hollander.
Fair enough.
100%. As I said earlier, he is too awful to work in the role that he's meant to work as. Not Tom Hollander. He's brilliant. The writing, it's too much. He's too nasty. Yeah. He's just too... It's like, why don't you have sex with my daughter? Everyone else has. What?
That is nasty business, isn't it?
It's just dark. However, he captures how I feel about most of this movie. And so I watch him and I'm like, yeah, I'm angry too.
I want to pick Bill Nighy, but I think you've put me off him, which is good. This is what the podcast is all about, because the speech at the wedding is pretty amazing. So just Rachel McAdams again. I mean, look.
Is it for every decision you make, I'll take off a piece. Is it that? Is that what swung
you? Do
you
know what I read?
Puppies? Do you want to see them?
I didn't read any more detail about it, but I read an interview with Richard Curtis where he said both Rachel McAdams and Domhnall Gleeson, that there was a version of that scene that they both weren't happy with. the strip, the wedding decision strip. So they went back and did it again. And I was reading between the lines. I was like, maybe no one was happy with this, but you were like, that's what we're doing. Yeah, because that's what people do. And they were like, no, they don't. So I wonder. But yes, Rachel McAdams, what would you change?
All right. Do not have a voiceover that describes a character as having eternally bare feet. In the opening 5 minutes, when in literally the scene before, she's wearing wellies, especially in a film about time travel. Do not have a character say, I've never met a rich person who was happy while standing in one of the 27 rooms of his clifftop mansion. Do not have a character pissed off at the suggestion she's gay while standing next to their gay best friend. And while you're at it, do not make Margot Robbie play such an unlikable character in the first place. That's actually amazing you managed to do that. Don't tell poor Donald Gleeson to be more Hugh Grant in every scene. And don't have a Kate Moss exhibition when your best friend's Kate Moss.
I don't say this lightly and I don't actually mean it, but Margot Robbie, I was like, prick tease. I never say that, but what the fuck? You get yourself into all sorts of a pickle. Let's wait. Let's not wait. Jesus Christ. My change is, right, Richard Curtis said, and I think this is really admirable and I do like it, when people who are going to love each other meet, they do just get on. That is the reason they're going to be together. Like, in real life, it isn't like, she's completely wrong for him, but we're going to, like, but whatever. Like, that's fair enough. The whole rom-com industry is based on, it shouldn't work, but it does. And it is nice to see something where it's like, oh, you two are lovely. I do get that. However, it is a movie and it does need that, I think. So I think you do have to pull them apart a bit to get them back together, because you've got to earn that wedding. I don't think you want Rachel McAdams walking down the aisle and the only thing you're thinking is, oh, red's a nice choice.
Wait, do you mean them in Act Two need some... Oh, it's the C word.
It's really technical.
conflict. Yeah, sure.
Some of that.
Any of that.
So what you can do is...
Just 20 minutes of just people getting on very well.
Yeah, and having a nice wedding.
Unbelievable.
So when earlier you said, Tim fixes Harry's life, even though Harry is a bit nasty to him and hates his dad, calls him a cock. And so why don't we lean into Tim, because he's nice and because he's Hugh Grant, just wants to fix everyone. And so he keeps fucking up his own relationship in some nice way. So that at that wedding, you're like, she might not do this because he's been absent or he's done whatever and he's chosen other things. She can't find out he's a time traveller for whatever reason. But, you know, there is something there, isn't it? Like, he just tries to do too much with his gift and therefore his relationship suffers. Also, you've mentioned it. Stop calling Vanessa Kirby a prostitute. It's fucking rude. It's rude.
All right, we done?
Yeah, we're done.
And...
breathe.
Deep breaths.
I feel so much lighter.
Reacclimatizing.
Yeah, recenter.
It's time for the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled. You want answers?
I want the truth!
So, these were Chris's choices. I'll step in and fill in this gap on his behalf. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
I found it hard because consent is a big deal. In Time Traveler's Wife, not great, but she knows what's going on. Even though I think, which is a mad thing to say, her character is even thinner than in About Time. For some reason, Mary works for me more than Claire. Like, I think that's because breadcrumbs of like what Claire could be, this sort of pampered girl, and it's not really dealt with. The voiceover in About Time gives me a stomach ulcer, as you can imagine. But I am won over by the messaging. And I do think Donald Gleeson does an amazing job considering what he has to, the hurdles he has to jump over, which is like do a Hugh Grant impression. I think Rachel McAdams lists both these films and does make them better than either of them deserve to be. But About Time does have something lovely in it. Right towards the end, as you said, maybe it's just the last 2 minutes, get past that nasty sex scene. And I do rag Richard Curtis because when he's doing it right, it is a little bit magic. And so About Time, if you ask me, do I like it? Yeah, I love that film. What's happened? True.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I honestly don't know.
I think I love that film, even though it's made me so furious.
Okay.
Yep, there we are.
So this is 100% no contest for me. About Time is a struggle. I find the Lake family insufferable.
Yeah.
I really don't like them. I honestly, I'm not one of them. I don't like any of them.
No.
And it takes a lot to make me not like Bill Nighy in a movie.
Yeah.
A lot. I love Tom Hollander because he hates everything. And man, that's how I feel about this movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a broken record. My winner is the flawed but not anger-inducing The Time Traveller's Wife.
Fascinating. And also, that's also the right choice. Mm. I don't know what is happening.
It's not. Do you know, on Rotten Tomatoes, Time Traveller's Wife, 38%.
Yeah.
About time.
Yeah.
70%.
70%.
70%.
Wow. Wowzers.
So let's turn it over to the one and only Chris Tilley.
Great.
I have a message from him.
I'm fascinated. I can't call it.
You can't call
it. Oh, do you know what? What I can call is this. Just some sort of insouciant, couldn't give a shit either way, mate. One of them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what to vote for. Is one much better than the other? I can't remember. My response. Vote Time Traveller's Wife. About Time is awful. Ace, I vote for Time Traveller's Wife. Did quite enjoy the book too. So, with me leaning on him a little, but again, like you said, he didn't really care.
No.
Time Traveller's Wife is our winner.
Fine, absolutely.
Are you fine with that?
Yeah, yeah. None of it makes any sense, does
well,
it?
Well, it'll be interesting because Chris really did. He really has taken the week off. He hasn't even given his vote a thought. So for once, I think, not for once, it's always interesting, but I think in this instance, it will be genuinely interesting what the poll says when it goes up on Twitter. Of course, as always, tell us how right or wrong we got it when the poll goes up about time versus the Time Traveller's Wife on Twitter. Very soon, but like I said, we have a winner, and it is the Time Traveller's Wife. So, next week.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot.
Yep. Next week. It is a clue. The clue I gave. That heist was carnage. Carnage. Wait, heist? Car?
With cars?
Car? There's cars involved.
Yeah.
Or ninjas. Right? No, it was cars. We are doing 1969's The Italian Job. That's right, drink your water so you don't huff. Versus 2011's Fast Five.
Brilliant.
Woo!
Yeah.
Car chases. That's my tempo. both I checked are available all over the shop. So please go out and find them. In the meantime, if you haven't, do subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts,
whatever,
just anywhere. Subscribe to us is the main thing. Doesn't matter where you do it. Be lovely. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. We'll be back on Monday talking The Italian Job. Have a lovely weekend. Bye bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.